Picture a 9-year-old sitting on a front porch in Omaha, Nebraska, counting cars as they pass. But this isn't a bored child passing time. He's calculating potential revenue streams, lamenting to his friend's mother what a shame it is they aren't monetizing all that traffic. While neighborhood kids traded baseball cards, Warren Buffett was memorizing city populations, tracking letter frequencies in newspapers, and conducting his own informal census of passing vehicles. Something was different about this kid, and it wasn't just precocious intelligence. It was an almost supernatural ability to see the world through the lens of compound interest and opportunity cost. Born in 1930 to stockbroker turned congressman Howard Buffett, Warren inherited more than just genes. He absorbed a worldview where every penny represented future empires. His childhood read like a masterclass in entrepreneurship, selling gum door to door, delivering newspapers, collecting golf balls to resell, even installing pinball machines in barbershops. At 11, he made his first stock purchase, 3 shares of Citi Service at $38 each. When the price plummeted to 27, most kids would have panicked or lost interest. Warren held on, selling at 40 for a modest $5 profit. Then he watched in agony as the stock climbed to 200. That moment of premature selling would haunt him, teaching a lesson worth millions. Patience isn't just virtue, it's the secret ingredient of wealth creation. Despite his family's religious devotion, Warren couldn't make the leap of faith. Too mathematical, too logical. Instead, he developed a paralyzing fear of death and an obsessive need to control his financial future, traits that would paradoxically make him one of history's greatest risk managers. When Warren Buffett entered Benjamin Graham's Columbia classroom, he discovered something revolutionary, a reliable system for beating the market. Before Graham, investing was glorified gambling, reading stock charts, chasing hot tips, riding speculation. Graham's philosophy crystallized into 3 words, margin of safety. Buy businesses trading significantly below intrinsic value, creating a cushion for inevitable errors. His famous Mr. Market parable illustrated this. Imagine a partner who daily offers wildly fluctuating prices for his stake. Wise investors ignore Mr. Market's moods and focus on underlying business value. For Buffett, this was revelation, his Paul on the road to Damascus moment, earning Graham's only A+ in 22 years. Yet when Buffett offered to work for free, Graham rejected him. Returning to Omaha, Buffett became the world's strangest stockbroker, reading Moody's manuals cover to cover, discovering undervalued cigar butts. In 1954, Graham finally hired him. At Graham Newman, partner Howard Newman called him Graham Exponential. When Graham retired in 1956, 26-year-old Buffett returned to Omaha with $140,000 and launched his own investment partnership. At 26, with modest savings and no steady income, Buffett possessed something more valuable, unshakable conviction. When prominent Omaha urologist Edwin Davis called about investing, Buffett laid out audacious terms: no disclosure about specific investments, yearly summaries only, capital changes restricted to December 31. His fee structure was equally bold. Partners got all profits up to 4%, then a 75-25 split thereafter. If returns were mediocre, Buffett earned nothing. Working from his bedroom, Buffett managed 5 partnerships totaling $500,000 by year-end 1957. His first-year results? 10% gain while the Dow dropped 8%. The next year brought 41% returns. Behind his wall of secrecy, Buffett followed Graham's principles with laser intensity. His edge wasn't breadth, it was depth. While others diversified widely, Buffett concentrated holdings in his best ideas, ridiculing fund managers who followed the Noah school of investing, two of everything. By 1960, approaching 30, Buffett gathered 11 doctors willing to invest $10,000 each. The following year brought his biggest bet, $1 million for controlling interest in Dempster Mill Manufacturing, a struggling windmill maker. His partnership letters evolved into educational manifestos, articulate, droll, self-deprecating, exploring investing principles with memorable examples, like Isabella's $30,000 Columbus investment that, at 4% compound interest, would have grown to $2 trillion. every illustration reinforced his obsession. Compounding and opportunity cost were the twin engines of wealth. By 1963, Buffett was evolving beyond Graham's strict formulas. While still buying bargains like Berkshire Hathaway, purchased at $7.60 when working capital alone was $16.50, he began recognizing what Graham's equations couldn't capture: franchise value. When American Express faced potential ruin from the salad oil scandal, its stock plunged to $35. Wall Street panicked. Buffett investigated differently. He visited restaurants, watching diners use their cards without hesitation. He checked with travelers about their checks. The brand remained untarnished. American Express controlled 80% of travelers' checks and dominated charge cards. This wasn't about tangible assets. It was about competitive moats. Buffett invested nearly a quarter of his partnership's assets, and the bet paid off spectacularly. Despite growing wealth, Buffett remained obsessively frugal. He refused life insurance, believing he could compound the premiums faster himself. When Susie spent $15,000 on furniture, he complained, "Do you know how much that is if you compound it over 20 years?" Every expenditure represented foregone future wealth, Queen Isabella's lost fortune playing out in his mind constantly. In May 1969, as Business Week crowned Fred Carr the best portfolio manager in the U.S., Buffett stunned Wall Street by quitting. He liquidated Buffett Partnership, explaining, "I am not attuned to this market environment, and I don't want to spoil a decent record by trying to play a game I don't understand." On Wall Street, nobody returns money at the peak. The go-go years had transformed investing into speculation. Young managers with no memory of 1929 chased momentum stocks with abandon. Buffett felt inescapable pressure to compete. The only way to slow down is to stop. As Buffett liquidated throughout 1969, the market collapsed. High flyers crashed. Litton Industries fell 70%. Ling Temco Vought plunged from 169 to 25. Fred Carr, celebrated in May, quit by December. By May 1970, the market had fallen by half. Buffett's 13-year record remained unblemished, profits and market-beating returns every single year. A $10,000 investment in the Dow would have yielded $15,260 in profit, with Buffett, $150,270. His 29.5% annual return versus the Dow's 7.4% was unprecedented. Berkshire Hathaway began as a struggling textile mill before Buffett transformed it into an investment vehicle. His 1967 acquisition of National Indemnity Company for $8.6 million revealed his strategic vision. Textiles consumed cash through constant reinvestment, while insurance generated it through float, premiums collected up front with claims paid later. By 1970, textiles earned just $45,000, while insurance and banking each generated over $2 million. As markets turned in the early 1970s, Buffett swept through investments, accumulating Washington Post shares in 1973 at $100 million, a company he valued at $400 million. Then came Coca-Cola. In fall 1988, after the stock fell 25%, Buffett bought $1.02 billion worth at $10.96 per share. Within 3 years, this stake soared to $3.75 billion. Unlike earlier investments based on balance sheet values, Coca-Cola's worth lay in intangibles: renewed international focus, overseas sales rising 34%, profit margins improving from 22% to 27%, and vast untapped markets. This investment challenged efficient market theory's claim that all public information was already priced in. Buffett found this absurd. "I have never been able to figure out why it's riskier to buy something at $40 million than at $80 million." By 1995, Berkshire stock hit $32,100, a 57% gain that year, making Buffett, with $15.2 billion, temporarily America's richest person. Over 31 years, Berkshire appreciated at 27.68% annually versus 10.7% for the S&P 500. A $10,000 investment in 1965 would have grown to $17.8 million versus just $224,000 in the index. Unlike Rockefeller or Carnegie, who dominated single industries, Buffett built his fortune purely through investing across diverse businesses. In 2006, Buffett pledged 85% of his Berkshire stock, 5/6, to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. His legacy transcended returns. He taught a generation how to think about business, transforming investing from gambling into logical analysis of tangible enterprises. Buffett turned investments into relationships and social contracts. His forever holding periods breached Wall Street's short-term horizons, proving that patience, discipline, and rationality triumph over speculation. The Oracle of Omaha built more than a fortune. He built a philosophy, proving the best investment is in your own ability to think clearly and act wisely.